to our origin of We the People. Tackling current issues, both political and legal, with common sense. As We the People, we must bring common sense back to make our lives better. Only on Now Media TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to We the People. It feels so good to be back with all of you. I have genuinely missed our conversations, and I hope each and every one of you had a wonderful Independence Day, enjoyed some well-deserved time with family and friends, and are having an incredible summer. Sometimes life reminds us that it's healthy to step away for a little while, to recharge, spend time with those we love, reflect, and simply enjoy the blessings that surround us. That's exactly what I've done over the past few weeks, and I have to tell you, I don't think there could have been a more perfect time to pause and simply appreciate what has been unfolding around our country. Because this just hasn't been an ordinary summer. This has been one of those rare moments that I think we'll look back on years from now and remember with a smile. America has just celebrated her 250th birthday. Think about it, 250 years. There aren't many nations in the world that can celebrate 2.5 centuries of constitutional government under the same founding principles. There certainly aren't many nations that have had the kind of influence on the world that the United States has had. Now, I know that for some people, even saying those words has somehow become controversial. It shouldn't be. Regardless of your politics, regardless of whether you voted Republican, Democrat, Independent, or perhaps you become completely exhausted by politics altogether, I hope we can all agree that reaching 250 years as a nation is something worth celebrating. It is worth pausing to reflect on. It is worth teaching our children about. And it is worth thanking those generations who came before us, those who sacrificed, who served, who built businesses, who raised families, who defended this country, and who kept the American experiment alive long enough for us to inherit it today. Now, I have to admit something. Over the past several weeks, I have found myself completely, absolutely obsessed by something that honestly I never expected would affect me the way it has, the FIFA World Cup. Now, before some of you laugh and say, Alina has suddenly become a soccer expert, no. I do love the game of soccer, but I am nowhere close to being an expert. But what I have been captivated about isn't just about the game or the matches of soccer or football, as they call it internationally. It is something bigger, much bigger. I've been watching the matches, of course, like millions of Americans. I've enjoyed seeing the excitement, the competition, and especially watching our own United States men's national team make such an inspiring run. There is something special about seeing Americans from every walk of life putting on the red, white, and blue, gathering at watch parties, filling sports bars, singing the national anthem with pride and cheering together. Just the thought of that in remembrance is giving me goosebumps. But if I'm being honest, what has fascinated me even more hasn't happened inside the stadiums. It's what's been happening outside of them. I've probably watched hundreds of videos over the last several weeks. Videos posted by visitors from Germany, England, Brazil, Argentina, Japan, Australia, Mexico, South Korea, France, the Netherlands, and of course, the Tartan Army, Scotland. Countries from every corner of the globe. They came here to our country because of soccer. But what they're leaving with is an entirely different impression of America than many expected. And I have absolutely loved watching it unfold. These visitors aren't just staying in New York City. They aren't just visiting Los Angeles. They're discovering America. They're driving through the Florida Panhandle. They're stopping in Alabama after matches and exhibition games. They're exploring Kansas City, spending time in Dallas, walking through historic Boston, and falling in love with New Orleans. And they're discovering places like Nashville and Miami. They're standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon in complete amazement. They're driving roads they've never driven before, eating food they've never tasted before, and meeting people they never expected to meet. And then they do something wonderful. They pull out their phones, they record their experiences, and they share them with the rest of the world. I don't know if you've seen these videos, but I hope you take some time to watch them because they are beautiful. They're authentic. They're joyful. One family couldn't believe how friendly complete strangers had been. Another visitor says people smile everywhere they go. Someone else was amazed that people actually strike up conversations while waiting in line. And others, well, they just can't stop talking about the Southern hospitality that they've been receiving in states like Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Texas, and yes, some parts of Florida. Some are laughing because they discovered Buc-ee's. I never even been to a Buc-ee's, but I'm telling you, it's now on a bucket list for me. And they can't believe because Buc-ee's is such a large gas station and store. Others are trying Waffle House for the very first time or eating Texas barbecue. And let's not even get into the craze over ranch dressing. And then those patrons that have gone to Bass Pro Shops thinking that they have entered into some type of American museum. And others have been discovering county fairs, local diners, family-owned restaurants, small businesses, and neighborhoods that rarely make international headlines. And I find myself smiling every single time because what they're experiencing isn't something manufactured. It isn't staged. It isn't scripted. It's simply America, real America, the America most of us know every single day. The waitress who greets you with a smile, the family that holds open the door, the police officer giving directions to confused visitors, the volunteer helping someone find the correct stadium, the hotel clerk recommending the best local restaurants, or the neighbor of the Airbnb who says hello while you're walking down the street. That's the America they're discovering. And perhaps it's the America many of us needed to rediscover ourselves. You know, there's an old saying that says familiarity breeds complacency. When you live somewhere your entire life, you stop noticing what makes it special. The mountains you've driven past 100 times, the beach you've always taken for granted, the neighborhood where everyone knows one another, the freedoms you've exercised your entire life, the opportunities that seem ordinary because they've always been there. Sometimes it takes someone seeing it for the very first time to remind you just how extraordinary it really all is. I think that's exactly what's happening this summer. Millions of visitors are experiencing America through fresh eyes. And in the process, they're helping many Americans see their own country with fresh eyes as well. That has been one of the most unexpected gifts of this World Cup. For years, we've heard people describe America in all kinds of ways. Sometimes we're told we're hopelessly divided. We're angry. We've lost what made us exceptional. Sometimes we're told America is in decline. And yet, here come millions of people from around the world, people who have no obligation to flatter us, people who are perfectly capable of criticizing us if they chose. Instead, they're posting videos saying, "This isn't what I expected. The people are so kind. Everyone has been so welcoming. The country is absolutely beautiful. I can't wait to come back." That should make all of us stop and think for just a moment. Because maybe, just maybe, we become so accustomed to looking at America through political arguments, headlines, and social media that we've forgotten to simply experiencing her ourselves. Now, don't misunderstand me. We have challenges in this country. And we always have. Our history isn't perfect. Our present circumstances aren't perfect. No country built by imperfect human beings ever will be. But perfection was never the promise. The promise was liberty. The promise was opportunity. The promise was that we, the ordinary people, could govern ourselves. Think back to 1776. Our founders were living during what historians call the Age of Enlightenment. They dared to challenge ideas that had dominated much of the world for centuries. They declared that our rights did not come from a king. They did not come from parliament. They did not come from government itself. They came from our creator. Government existed to secure those rights, not to create them. That was revolutionary, and that needs to be expressed every day. Because we need to be reminded of that. We the people, that's what the Constitution begins with. Not we the government, not we the politicians, we the people. When we come back, I want to talk about why it sometimes takes the perspective of outsiders to remind us of what we've always had and why I believe this remarkable summer has rekindled something that many Americans didn't even realize they were missing, a renewed appreciation for our country. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to We the People. You know, before the break, we talked about something that has genuinely touched my heart over the past several weeks. We talked about the incredible experience of watching visitors from around the world discover America, not through the lens of our politics or of cable news, but through their own experiences. They came here expecting one thing. Many said that they were scared to come, that the media in their country said we were horrible, we had high crime, we were at a division, that they might not even get past customs. But they're leaving talking an entirely different scenario. And that got me thinking, what is it that they're actually seeing? Because if you really stop and think about it, there are beautiful moments in Switzerland. There are incredible beaches in Australia. There are magnificent cities throughout Europe. There are ancient civilizations that have existed for thousands of years. So why, after 250 years, does America still hold this almost magnetic pull on the human imagination? Why do millions of people still dream of coming here? Why do many visitors leave saying, "I can't wait to come back"? I don't believe the answer is found in our buildings. It's definitely not found on our highways. And it's not found in the sports stadiums that they are going to watch their matches. I think it's found in an idea. America has always been more than a place. America is an idea. And that's what makes our country unlike any other. Most nations were formed around a common ethnicity, a common language, or a common history stretching back centuries. Americans came from everywhere, different languages, different religions, different customs, different cultures, different traditions. The thing that united them wasn't where they came from. It is what they believed. And that is still true today. As an attorney, I spend my days working with the law. I read statutes, I read court opinions, I work with legal documents that affect people's lives every single day. Sometimes it's easy, even for lawyers, to focus on the mechanics of the law and forget the extraordinary philosophy that lies underneath it. Because before there was a Constitution, before there was a Bill of Rights, before there was a Supreme Court, there was a question. can ordinary people govern themselves? For most of human history, the answer had been no. Kings governed, queens governed, emperors governed, the powerful governed, ordinary people obeyed. They became a generation that dared to believe something different, and that is who our forefathers were. One of the things I found most fascinating while preparing for today's program was revisiting the words of John Adams. Like many of us, when we think of the American Revolution, we picture Lexington and Concord. We picture George Washington crossing the Delaware. We picture Valley Forge or even Yorktown. But John Adams said it something remarkable years after the Revolution had ended. He said the real American Revolution had already taken place before those battles were ever fought. It had taken place, in his words, in the minds and hearts of the people. He described it as a radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affections of Americans. Think about it. The Revolution wasn't simply about defeating Great Britain or freeing the colonies from the monarchy. It was about changing the way people thought, changing the way people viewed themselves. Instead of subjects, imagine they were subjects. That's like property. But thanks to these, our forefathers, thanks to the Enlightenment of 1776 that brought forth our Constitution, we now became, or those individuals became, citizens. Instead of asking what government would allow them to do, they began asking what rights they already possessed simply because they were human beings. That was revolutionary. And I wonder whether we've forgotten just how revolutionary that still is. You know, over the last several years, we spent an enormous time arguing about politics, elections, about race, about immigration, about history, about economics. We've argued about almost everything imaginable. But somewhere in all those arguments, I think we stopped asking one of the most crucial questions. What is America trying to become? Because America has never claimed to be perfect. Never. In fact, our founders understood human imperfection better than most. That's why they divided power. That's why they created the checks and balances. That's why they limited government. That's why they wrote a constitution instead of simply trusting whoever happened to be in office. They understood something timeless. Power must always be restrained. Liberty must always be protected, and citizens must always remain engaged. That wasn't cynicism. That is wisdom. Thomas Jefferson understood that these ideas belong not only to his own generation, but to every generation that would follow. Writing near the end of his life for the 50th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, he expressed the hope that its principles would continue inspiring people everywhere to embrace self-government. And he wished that each future 4th of July would renew our devotion to those rights. I love that. Not because Jefferson expected future generations to agree with him on everything, but because he understood that freedoms requires remembrance. Every generation has to rediscover it. Freedom isn't inherited automatically. It has to be appreciated, protected, practiced, and passed on. That's true whether you're talking about a family, a community, or an entire nation. As I watched these visitors traveling across America, I wasn't just seeing tourists. I was watching people encounter an idea that was born in 1776. They were discovering communities where people still wave to strangers, where veterans are thanked for their service, where neighborhoods gather for local festivals and fireworks, where churches, synagogues, mosques, and temples sit in the same communities. where children still play baseball in local parks and volunteers organize food drives, where first responders run towards danger instead of away from it, where millions upon millions of ordinary people quietly live decent, honorable lives without ever making the evening news. That is America. You and me, we are America. Not because every community looks the same, quite the opposite. One of the things I've always loved about this country is that there isn't just one America. Spend a week in New England and you'll experience multitude of cultures just within Boston alone. Drive through the Carolinas. You'll experience a different culture in that state. Visit the ranches of Texas, the fishing villages of Maine, the farms of Iowa, the vineyards of California, the neighborhoods of Miami, the pueblos of New Mexico, the Great Plains, the Appalachian Mountains, and I can go on and on. They're all different. We all have different accents. We all have different traditions, food, music, histories. I mean, in reality, we are 50 states that are just as different as the countries in Europe. The one difference is that we are all under one beautiful big umbrella, which is these United States of America. We're not united because we look alike, and we're not united because we worship alike or that we vote alike. God only knows we do not agree on politics. But what we are America's. We are American. We are the United States of America. We may have failures. We may have moments we should never forget. There are failures. History definitely has shown us that. There have been mistakes made, but that is how we continue to evolve. Our greatest leaders have consistently called us back, not away from our founding principles, but back to them. Abraham Lincoln didn't reject the Declaration of Independence. He challenged America to live up to it. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. didn't reject the Constitution. He reminded America of its promises. Susan B. Anthony argued that the principles of liberty applied equally to women. Generation after generation has expanded freedom by insisting that we honor the very ideals that our nations, our founding fathers, forged. That is one of the most remarkable stories in human history. Not because progress has always been fast. Not because it's been easy. But because the aspiration has remained the same, to become, in the words of our Constitution, a more perfect union. Notice those words carefully. Not a perfect union, a more perfect one. That tells us something profound. The founders understood that perfection wasn't possible. Progress was. And I think that's why this summer has meant so much to me, because for a little while, it felt like America remembered how to celebrate itself again, not arrogantly, not triumphantly, but gratefully, watching families from around the world walk our streets, visit our national parks, tour our museums, and experience our history and our celebration of the birth of this country. Gratitude. And gratitude isn't pretending everything is perfect. Gratitude is recognizing the blessings, even while acknowledging the challenges, the blessings that our forefathers gave us and our freedoms that come from our Creator. When we return, I want to ask a different question. If so many visitors are seeing an optimistic, welcoming, generous America, why do so many Americans see only division and decline? Is it possible that somewhere between our headlines, our algorithms, and our politics, we've begun looking at our country through a distorted lens? That's what's next. Stay with us on We the People. Welcome back. You know, over the last couple of segments, we've looked at America through the eyes of millions of visitors who have come here from around the world. We've celebrated our 250 50th year anniversary, the birth of our country and our independence. We've talked about the incredible ideas that gave birth to this nation, and we've reflected on why those ideas still matter today. But now I'd like to ask a question that I think all of us should wrestle with. How did we get here? How is it that millions of visitors can leave our country talking about kindness, generosity, optimism, and opportunity, while at the very same time, many Americans describe our nation as though it is defined almost exclusively by oppression, division, and failure? Those two pictures can't both represent the whole story. So somewhere in the middle, there's a truth we need to find. As many of you know, I practiced law for nearly 3 decades. And one of the things you learn very quickly as a lawyer is that facts matter. Evidence matters. Context matters. But there's another principle that lawyers understand that I don't think we talk about nearly enough outside the courtroom. Context is not excuse. Let me say that again. Context is not excuse. Every day, judges ask lawyers to provide context. Why did something happen? What were the circumstances? What events led to this decision or this action? Context helps us understand, but understanding isn't the same thing as approving. Explanation is not exoneration. That's true in the courtroom. It's true in our personal lives, and I believe it's true when we discuss the history of our nation. We should absolutely teach slavery. We should teach segregation. We should teach the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. We should teach the Chinese Exclusion Act, the Trail of Tears. And we should teach every chapter of our history honestly and completely. Not because those chapters define America, but because they remind us of why our founding principles matter so much. History should make us wiser. It should make us humble. It should challenge us to do better than the generations that came before us. But somewhere over the last several years, I think we've begun treating history differently. Instead of allowing history to teach us, we've been allowing history to define us. And that's the error. And that is an important difference. Every civilization has chapters of which it is proud and chapters it wishes had never been written. That question isn't whether a nation has made mistakes. Every nation has. The question is this: what does a nation do next? How do we evolve from learning from our historical mistakes and our triumphs? You don't deny the failures. You don't hide them. And you definitely don't rewrite them, and you don't make them an identity for generations later to say you need to pay the mistakes of the people who came before you centuries before. But we do have to have the courage to confront them honestly, learn from them, and continue striving towards its highest ideals. I believe that's the true measure of a great nation. I often think about modern Germany. No serious person would ever suggest that Germany should forget the Holocaust. Quite the opposite. German students study it. Museums preserve it. Their leaders confront it. They remember it. They condemn it. But modern Germany is not asked to believe that every generation born after World War II is forever imprisoned by the sins of those who came before them. Imagine, that was what? Back in the 1940s, 80 some years ago. And they are not expected to harbor the ills and be punished for what happened 80 years before. The same question has to be asked on us. Why are we still being identified or harnessed with the yoke of the ills of centuries ago? Instead, the Germans have spent decades writing new chapters, and that is same throughout Europe. Great Britain doesn't erase the difficult history of slavery or the British Empire. France doesn't ignore the Vichy government. Italy doesn't pretend fascism never existed. These nations confront difficult chapters honestly, but they also recognize that history cannot become the prison from which future generations are never allowed to escape. They remember, they learn, they move forward. And that is what is so different. Why should our children be taught that they inherit only shame? Why are our children being taught that they must pay for the wrongs that occurred in the 1800s? Responsibility to preserve what was noble, responsibility to correct what was wrong, which is what happened with the Emancipation Proclamation. Responsibility to continue building a nation that more closely reflects the principles we discussed in our last segment. That's exactly what previous generations have done. Think about Abraham Lincoln. He didn't reject the Declaration of Independence. He called America back to it. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. reminded us of the promises that were made for all of the United States. The civil rights movement wasn't built upon rejecting America's founding ideas. It appealed to them. It argued that our nation had failed to live consistently with its own principles. That's a different argument than saying the principles themselves were corrupt. And that's why I worry about some of the conversations we're hearing today. Not because I think we should stop criticizing America. That is our right as we the people. We get to criticize the government. We get to criticize and question and debate about how our country continues to evolve. Healthy criticism is essential. Our founders expected it. They designed a government that invited disagreement. But there's a profound difference between criticizing your government and teaching people to despise their country. Those are not the same thing. Governments deserve criticism. Every administration should be questioned. Congress should be held accountable. Courts should be scrutinized. Public officials work for us, we the people, not the other way around. That's citizenship. That's democracy. That is what this great experiment is built upon. And America is larger than any administration. It is larger than any political party, any election cycle. And lately, I've been concerned that we're beginning to lose that distinction. Over the past year, we've watched the growing popularity of candidates who openly identify themselves as socialists. Now, before anyone labels what I'm about to say as partisan, let me be very clear. This isn't about whether you're a Democrat or Republican. Reasonable people can disagree about tax policies, healthcare, immigration, foreign policy, education. Those debates are worth having. But some of the rhetoric we're hearing today goes far beyond policy disagreements. When someone tells young Americans that capitalism itself is evil, when America is described as fundamentally oppressive, when our founding ideals are dismissed as nothing more than hypocrisy, we're no longer debating policy. We're debating whether the American experiment itself is worth preserving. In other words, whether the United States of America should continue as it is, because history has already given us examples of what happens when societies lose confidence in the principles that protect individual liberty. One of the most disturbing examples I've heard recently was the suggestion by some public figures, and more specifically, she'll be the new congressional woman in Denver, who stated that she's a Democrat socialist, but yet she has spoken out loud, stating that America somehow deserved the attacks of September 11th because America's foreign policy, that innocent people were killed. I mean, how is it that we have already forgotten 9/11. In 25 years? This woman isn't decrying that. So basically what? 9/11 was because of our government officials, military commanders, elected leaders, that we were deserving of that? That nearly 3,000 innocent people, office workers, police officers, mothers, fathers, flight attendants, restaurant employees, janitors, sons, daughters, they were deserving to die? That's ludicrous. But these are the people that are now coming into office. And yes, I take offense to that. There is nothing morally courageous about rationalizing terrorism against innocent civilians. And I will challenge any of these individuals to say that 9/11, we deserved 9/11, or that those poor innocents in Israel deserved October 7th. There is nothing intellectually sophisticated about suggesting that those lives were somehow an acceptable consequence of geopolitical disagreement. We can debate foreign policy, and we should. We can criticize wars, and we should. We can question our leaders, and that is absolutely what we should be doing. But we should never lose the moral clarity to distinguish between legitimate criticism and hatred of the very country that protects our freedom to criticize. We should never lose the moral clarity to distinguish between legitimate criticism and the hatred of the very country that protects our freedom to criticize. Those are two different aspects. And that is something that we need to see. And maybe that's why it is such a valuable lesson from the visitors that are coming, to see America through their eyes. So when we come next, after this break, I want to talk about what comes next. What does the future hold? As now we can reflect back on the 250 years. Tune right back in. Welcome back. As we close today's program, I'd like to leave you with one final thought. We spent the last hour talking about the America we inherited. Now I'd like us to think about the America we're going to leave behind. You know, one of the unexpected blessings of celebrating our nation's 250th birthday is that it forces us to think differently about time. See, most of us think in election cycles. I mean, heck, now it's on every 2 years. We don't even get a break. But 250 years changes your perspective. Suddenly, we're reminded that we're just one generation of very long American story. The men and women who signed the Declaration of Independence had no idea what America would look like in 2026. They couldn't imagine airplanes, televisions, or even the internet, artificial intelligence, space travel, the World Cup, or the world coming together like it has. They couldn't possibly have imagined any of it. But they understood something that every generation must eventually come to terms with. They weren't building America for themselves. They were building it for people they would never meet. I think we've lost some of that perspective. We become consumed by today's headlines, the outrage, the elections, the crises, the arguments. And in doing so, we've sometimes forgotten that we're temporary stewards of something much larger than ourselves. I spend much of my professional life helping families prepare for their future. As an estate planning attorney, people often come to my office believing they're going to talk about money and who's going to get what. But it's not. That's not what we do. We're talking about their legacies. What do I want my children to inherit? What values matter most? What do I hope they'll remember about me? Money is just part of the conversation. Character is a much larger part. And nations, especially one like the United States, is not that different. Every generation leaves an inheritance, not just roads, not just bridges, not just buildings. We leave institutions. We leave culture. We leave traditions. Confident or fear. We leave gratitude or resentment. We leave opportunity or dependence. Every generation writes the opening chapter for the next. So let me ask you a question. When Americans gather in 2276, to celebrate the 500th anniversary of these United States, what will they say about us? Will they say we were the generation that lost confidence in freedom, or the generation that rediscovered it? Will they say we became so consumed with yesterday that we stopped believing in tomorrow? Or will they say we confronted history honestly while we still believed in the future could be better? I hope it's the latter, because I don't believe patriotism means pretending America is perfect. It never has. Patriotism means loving your country enough to make it better. It means telling the story, all of it, the inspiring chapters, the painful chapters, the triumphant moments, and our failures. Then asking ourselves, what am I going to contribute? Not what am I going to complain about? What am I going to build? Who am I going to mentor? What example am I going to set? How am I going to strengthen my family, my neighborhood, my community, my country? Because America has never been transformed only from Washington. She has been transformed from kitchen tables, church pews, school classrooms, factory floors, small businesses, family farms, volunteer organizations, neighborhoods where ordinary people quietly decide to do extraordinary things. That's always been the American story. Perhaps that's what those millions of World Cup visitors reminded us without even realizing it. They didn't fall in love with the political party. They didn't travel here because of a campaign slogan or to just dismantle or say disgraces against the very fiber that makes this country great. They came and discovered a people who is generous, optimistic, creative, hardworking, welcoming, imperfect, but striving. And maybe that's how we should begin seeing one another again. Not first as Republicans or Democrats, conservatives, progressives, liberals, but as Americans. Americans with different opinions, with a shared inheritance, with a shared responsibility. You know, this program is called We the People, not we the government, not we the politicians, not we the parties, we the people. Those three words remind us that the ultimate responsibility for this republic has always rested with us, not because we're perfect, but because free people are capable of extraordinary things when we refuse to surrender either our principles or our hope. As we celebrate America's 250th birthday, perhaps the greatest gift we can give the next generation isn't the illusion of a perfect nation. Perhaps it's something even more valuable. The confidence that this nation, like every generation before it, is still worth improving, still worth defending, still worth believing in. That is what's most important. Because 250 years later from the inception of this great experiment, to 250 years later, the responsibility is ours. The rest of the world has been helping us remember why this nation has inspired millions of people for generations. Our Constitution created an entirely new framework for self-government. The Bill of Rights followed, guaranteeing freedoms that much of the world had never before seen protected in this way, and many countries do not have what we have. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, the right to peacefully assemble, due process, and the right to people to petition this government. Imagine that. Many people say the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, is a negative right. But what it says is it's not a negative rights to the people, we the people. It is telling the government what they cannot do. They shall not abridge our rights to freedom of speech. I mean, every single Bill of Rights that we have, which makes up the first 10 amendments, and then we have created more, it is stating restrictions on the government, those very same people up in the Capitol. You know, we say that we are now on the verge of fascism or communism and such. And yes, these same battles, these same, debates over what type of governing body, those were in existence prior to World War II. They have been in existence for some time. However, what we the people need to remember and celebrate is, as imperfect as the people were that founded this country and following, that document, this living, breathing document, which is our Constitution, is what affords us the greatest gifts. It is our liberties. It is our rights. That document and our flag is what makes America great. It's we the people that make this country worth fighting for, worth believing in, and continuing to stand up for her. So as we're wrapping up this show, and I hope you enjoy it. First and foremost, happy birthday, America. Here's to the first 250 years and to the generations who will write the next 250 after we're long gone. Because I, for one, am extremely proud to be an American. I am grateful for everything this country has afforded my family, who escaped communism to come to this country with nothing and live the American dream. I don't take it for granted, and I sure as hope you don't either. And for those future generations, may you continue to breathe the very freedoms that we enjoy today. I'm Alina Gonzalez-Stockery. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, remember that this republic has never belonged to politicians. It has always belonged to we the people. Good night.